This is Drew Mackey, and you're listening to Singing Mountain. When I think about video games that change the way I look at video games, it's a short list of titles. There's Final Fantasy IV, for example, because at the time I played it, I'd never played anything with a story of that scale before. And there's the first Animal Crossing we got in the United States, because I'd never played a game where you can't beat it, you just do stuff. And then there's Donkey Kong Country, which was revolutionary for me not only because it didn't look like anything I'd seen before on a 16-bit system, but also because of the music, which resonated with me in a way I didn't know video game music could. Donkey Kong Country sounded different, and much of the reason for that difference was David Wise, the British composer who did most of the game's soundtrack. He did the track you're hearing now. It's Fear Factory from the first Donkey Kong Country, a great track that also had a hand in introducing me to the band Fear Factory, which I'm going to call a double win. But this isn't the second installment of my VGM and pop music series. This episode is going to be typical Singing Mountain, exclusively VGM. That second installment is coming, by the way, but this episode is all about David Wise. It's funny, I think of Donkey Kong Country as being a David Wise thing, but it's kind of not. That first game, a number of tracks were composed by Evelyn Fisher, and then Robin Beanland did Funky Kong's theme, so it was mostly David Wise, but not wholly. David was the sole composer on Donkey Kong Country 2, but Evelyn Fisher did the vast majority of the third game. Wise didn't do Donkey Kong 64 or Donkey Kong Country Returns, and only came back to the series with Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. I guess the reason I think of Donkey Kong Country belonging to David Wise the way Final Fantasy belongs to Nobuo Uematsu or Dragon Quest belongs to Koichi Sugiyama is that his compositions in the first two games had such a profound effect on me. I'm not putting down any of the other people who worked on the series, but there is something special in David Wise's work in that he knows how to instantly and efficiently set a mood. You're scared or you're relaxed or you're happy, and often he makes you feel those emotions rather than just imagine what your character on screen is feeling. He also knows how to shorthand a location, by which I mean that he knows how to quickly tell you you're in the jungle versus you're in the forest, or you're in a snowfield versus you're in an ice cave, which, when you think about it, are actually rather complicated distinctions to make purely with music. Maybe most importantly, he's doing all this work while giving you a catchy melody. You will be humming these songs long after you turn off the game. Conveying mood and scene while keeping the music catchy is tough, but it's something any composer can do on a good day. But I think David Wise does it more successfully more often than most. Maybe I'm just a fanboy, but he really does it for me, and has ever since I first played Donkey Kong Country and said, "Whoa, I need to find out who made this music." That, by the way, was in 1994, but it's not as if David Wise simply materialized in the offices of Rare to work on that game. No, he'd been working there since 1987, honing his craft since the early days of the NES, even working on games that I played but didn't realize he had any involvement with. So while I think most of us would hear David Wise's name and think Donkey Kong Country, there were a lot of titles that led up to that, and I got to thinking, surely some of his earlier compositions feature some of the genius we came to know in Donkey Kong Country, right? They do. David Wise arrived in the world of video game music because he was working at a music store where he demonstrated the Yamaha CX-5 synthesizer to brothers Tim and Chris Stamper, who happened to have founded the software company Rare in 1985. To show off the capabilities of the synthesizer, David played a composition he'd written, and the Stampers were impressed enough that they offered him a job. The company's first game was the skiing title Versus Slalom, released in 1986 for the Nintendo Versus system, which was that thing where you could play NES titles competitively in an arcade cabinet. The game was also released for the NES in 1987 as Regular Slalom, and both versions feature David's music. Here's the only full-length composition from either version of Slalom, which is either titled Race Start or Downhill Theme, depending on where you're looking. You can hear some of Wise's flair for synthy music, and I think he's working well within the limits of what the NES could do. Wise actually gave an interview to Eurogamer in 2017 about his return to the Donkey Kong series, and he compared the NES's sound capabilities to those of a glorified doorbell. Quote, "Three channels for music and a noise channel that wasn't particularly glorious. The job became about making things sound as nice as possible with the limited hardware we had, which was very difficult when you only have plinky plonky sounds." Plinky Plonky Sounds would be a great name for a VGM podcast. Just putting that out there. By the time he was composing music for the next Rare title, I'd say he not so much overcame the limitations of the NES, but learned how to work better within them. That game was the first Wizards and Warriors title, and I remember playing this as a kid, not having any idea who David Wise was, but nonetheless sensing that the game's music was different. I'm going to play two stage themes for you. Fire Caverns, and then Inner Castle. The first one does a great job of setting the mood, which is tense and dangerous because the cavern is on fire for some reason. But I would say hints at the location too, with the rumbling bassline that begins the loop working as a musical abstraction for the kind of deep-in-the-earth seismic terror you'd want a level like this to evoke. The second track, Inner Castle, I don't think gets the mood across so much, but is very catchy. I won't be playing this many tracks for all the games I'll be discussing, and by the way, I won't be playing music from every game he composed pre-Donkey Kong Country, but I will be playing one more from Wizards and Warriors, just because I think it gives us an idea of what David is capable of doing just within the confines of a very brief loop of music. It is the Princess Rescued theme, which you actually hear more than once through the game just because you have to rescue more than one princess. It's a little medieval fantasy that doesn't really sound like the rest of the game. It is catchy as hell. It feels like a reward in that it sounds so different, and I just love it so much. Have a listen. From here on out, Rare's production schedule picks up, and so does Wise's. I think the quality of his compositions also improves, which is remarkable considering that, according to that same interview with Eurogamer, he was often given mere weeks to turn around the music for a game, sometimes as little as 2 weeks. In 1988, Rare released RC Pro-Am for the NES. It was one of the first racing games I ever played on a console, now that I think about it, and I'm going to play the title theme for this game now. It's the first example I can think of another hallmark of David Wise's music. See if you can guess what it is. So I purposely didn't tell you much about this game because I wanted you to listen to the title theme on its own merits. What did you think about this music? I would say it's driving, pun intended. There's an energy to it. There's an urgency to it. And I can very easily imagine it being the soundtrack to a high-stakes race. Here's the thing. The RC and RC Pro-Am actually stands for remote controlled. These aren't real cars you're controlling in this game. They're little remote controlled toys. Given that premise, I feel like a lot of composers would be tempted to come up with something dinkier and sillier and kiddier than what David Wise did. He treated those little remote control toys seriously, and I think this is another virtue of his work. The prospect of his audience being most likely little kids doesn't really push him to do juvenile music. He didn't do that with Donkey Kong Country either, and I think part of that series' success might have happened because the music gives the game a certain sense of gravity that another composer would not have attempted. I'm going to skip over Marble Madness because, though it sounds great, I'm pretty sure it's just David arranging existing music written for the original arcade version by Brad Fuller and Hal Cannon. However, unless I'm mistaken, he did create original music for the NES installment of California Games, a game that lets you play what is essentially a proto-extreme sports showcase with a half-pipe event, a surfing event, and a footbag event that I think is a non-trademark version of Hacky Sack. It's very much what the world at large seemed to think California was in the late 80s and early 90s. And having grown up here, please believe me that it is not true. It was never like that. But it looks nice in cover art form. I'm going to play the halfpipe theme, the footbag theme, and finally the theme for the flying disc event, which totally isn't Frisbee, but is just Frisbee. This is not a Rare release, by the way, because apparently David got to compose for other companies at this point in his career, but even though it's not Rare, it's very much so his style and will probably remind you of Battletoads, which is just a few years off. Have a listen. Some of the titles David did work on for Rare were licensed games based on movie properties. If you were alive in the late 80s and early 90s, you probably remember that every movie that might be appealing to boys, and maybe the occasional one that might be appealing to girls, was turned into a video game, but also that many of these movie-inspired games were garbage. I don't think I played any of the ones that David worked on, and I can't vouch for their quality gameplay-wise, but I have listened to the soundtracks and can say they're quite good. Not just because they sound like David Wise, but also because they were cases where the movie license didn't mean getting the rights to the music, which meant that David or anyone else making the soundtrack to these games had to be like, well, here's what I think it should sound like, and take the ballsy move of layering their own music onto these familiar properties. So the game I'm playing for you is Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which apparently takes a lot of liberties with the source material, which was par for the course, because Hollywood script often did not translate into a standard platformer game. The track I'm playing is the Continue theme, and this is a very short piece that loops in about 40 seconds, but I swear, in those 40 seconds, he gets a sense of wistfulness that's entirely appropriate for a Continue screen, yet also somehow a lot deeper than I would ever expect from a Roger Rabbit video game. I really like this piece. It hits me in an emotional place that I really cannot explain and wouldn't have expected. Another licensed property that David took to a surprising place was Wheel of Fortune. He actually did a few different Wheel of Fortune games. The first one, released in 1987, is pretty much what you'd expect. Keeping that in mind, listen to what the title screen sounds like in Wheel of Fortune Family Edition, released in 1990. That is awesome. It's like a Donkey Kong Country boss fight meets Crazy Motorcycle Chase from Final Fantasy VII. And is my favorite kind of VGM surprise, where it's so much more interesting than you would expect, and you say, that is way better than it should be. But that's what David Wise does in general. Wizards and Warriors got not one but two sequels on the NES, and I really dig the soundtracks for both to the point that I think I'm just going to do one of those Friday 30-minute episodes that's just tracks from this series, rather than weighting this one episode too much in favor of it. But I will play for you now the title track to Iron Sword Wizards and Warriors 2, aka the only NES game that has Fabio on the cover art. It really is Fabio. It's kind of weird to look at now. I'm not sure I would peg this track as being by David Wise if I didn't already know he wrote it, and it's actually giving me a lot of that classical piece Montagues and Capulets, which I was not expecting. It is awesome. Wizards and Warriors on Friday, I promise. So I did a lot of Ice Music episodes this year that were all sequels to episode 12, Diamond Dust, which is the first winter music episode I did, but also the first Singing Mountain where I was like, oh, okay, I figured out what this podcast is. The first track I played in episode 12 was the Ice Cavern theme from Battletoads. In doing research for this episode, I found out that Battletoads track is a remake of one David Wise had done earlier for an otherwise forgotten 1990 platformer titled Digger T-Rock, where the hero is a miner named Digger T-Rock. Go listen to episode 12 if you want to hear the Battletoads version, but please get ready for the original version, the stage 4 theme from this mining game, which I'm following up with the stage 2 theme, which is also very Battletoads-esque and very final level in a Donkey Kong Country game-esque. Thank you. earlier in this episode, I was talking about the difficulty in making original music for a property that already has associated music, but which you didn't get the rights to use. And I guess Roger Rabbit had music, but I can't remember it. But I can really remember how the Nightmare on Elm Street movie sounded, which, by the way, is this. It's not John Carpenter's score to Halloween, but it's pretty iconic in the canon of horror movies. The NES Nightmare on Elm Street adaptation got to use the likeness of Freddy Krueger, but not the music. But that doesn't matter, because David Wise pulled out some really solid tunes for this game. They're very much in the spirit of the movie, which is about how scary things can intrude on the most mundane parts of your life. I realize that that could probably be the description of any horror movie ever, but can't say that I'm wrong. I don't know if this was his plan exactly, but I feel like the songs in this game sound very much like standard NES music. You know, standard, but well-composed. But then they take turns towards something darker, as if, you know, Freddy Krueger is suddenly in a place that was safe beforehand. Am I overreading this? Probably. Regardless, they do everything good VGM should. Set the mood, set the location, and deliver a melody you can hum. Have it listen to a track from that game that is simply titled Elm Street, which I guess would be an area in the game you would explore. That makes sense. But yeah, here's Elm Street. In September 1990, Rare put out a game called Time Lord that is apparently not a Doctor Who property and is also apparently not worth playing. Most reviews seem to think it was unsuccessful as far as being a game, but I think the soundtrack might actually be pretty good. Knowing nothing whatsoever about this game, listen to the following track and think what vibes you're getting from it. We'll be right back. So if I told you that Time Lord was a sci-fi action platformer about fighting aliens and that the track you just heard is titled Castle Harmon, would that jive with what you're expecting? Because I'm getting sci-fi B-movie but also action with a dollop of Baroque fussiness on top that I imagine would be very appropriate in a level called Castle Harmon. Along very similar lines, have a listen to the ending theme to Solar Jetman, a space-themed shooter that smashes together the exact right amounts of adventure and deep space despair. Deep Space Despair is my band name, by the way. Please keep an ear out for the Deep Space Despair in this next track, which, weird to like make an ending theme kind of sad, but I haven't played this game. Maybe it's a sad ending. I really don't know. So now it's 1991. Donkey Kong Country is 3 years off, but David is about to score the biggest moment of his career so far. Battletoads, a brawler beat-em-up which answers the question, what if the Ninja Turtles, but not turtles, and also not so Japanese? You play as one of three buff toads named Zitz, Pimple, and Rash, because poochification of the 1990s was in full effect. But despite how silly this sounds, David Wise once again gives this game music that doesn't sound like it's joking. It's a bit harder, sound-wise, than Donkey Kong Country, and maybe trying a little bit more to sound cool than Donkey Kong Country ever did, but it's really good. It's also appropriate that the music isn't messing around at all, because this game was really, really, really hard. And I feel like on some level, the soundtrack made players feel a little like, no, you're not too stupid to play this game, it is really tough. I don't know if that makes sense, it makes sense in my head. The seriousness of the music maybe matches the difficulty of the game, which is probably not something David Wise could have anticipated, but at the very least, is a happy coincidence. I'm going to play you three tracks from the NES Battletoads. The first is Surf City, which is not beachy at all. And then Ragnarok Canyon, which is also not beachy at all. And then thirdly, the final boss music, which is titled Armageddon, which is actually not super boss sounding, but actually more of a final level sound, but still very, very sharp. Again, I get Last Level in a Donkey Kong Country game from all three of these tracks. In 1991, Rare put out a platformer adaptation of Beetlejuice, which was weird because Beetlejuice came out in 1988. And I don't think this adaptation was supposed to tie into the cartoon because the cover has the art from the movie. But also, wasn't it weird that they tried to make a cartoon out of Beetlejuice? Like, one where Beetlejuice wasn't evil and was friends with Lydia Deetz rather than trying to, you know, kidnap her and force her to marry him? Cartoons are weird. That is not important. This is another instance of a property with a famous theme song that David Wise had to come up with some sort of substitute for when making the video game version. And what he turned out is actually really solid, really classic 8-bit VGM. Have a listen to the track Stage House from Beetlejuice. Following a brief foray away from hulking amphibian brawlers, we are going back because I'm skipping over Snake, Rattle, and Roll because I legit just do not really like that music that much, and also Wizards and Warriors 3, which, as I told you, I'm going to cover in more depth on Friday. But that leaves us in 1993, when the second NES Battletoads outing saw the Toads teaming up with the boys from Double Dragon. David Wise once again did the score, and what's interesting here is that he had to satisfy both fans of the original title, but also fans of Double Dragon, which at this point had had three sequels beyond the original to establish how it was supposed to sound. David Wise does not disappoint, and while these compositions don't have the sense of place and the use of ambient sound that people like so much in Donkey Kong Country, they're very close to matching the energy of that series' hardest driving tracks. I'm going to play for you the prologue theme, and then the themes from Stage 3 and Stage 5. So now we're in 1994, which is the year that Donkey Kong Country was released. But I'm actually going to conclude with one final non-Donkey Kong Country track from a game I'm pretty sure you've never heard of. It's called Monster Max. It is the only Game Boy title I'm featuring in this episode. It is an isometric puzzle adventure game starring a demon dude who loves music. And I'll say again that American pop culture was at maximum levels of Poochie at this point in time. The game got rave reviews, but it also sold very poorly, which means I'm about to play you a track you've probably never heard. I don't know what it is. It's just labeled as OST1. Based on a playthrough I watched, it doesn't seem to be the title screen theme or the level 1 theme, but it's really good, and it's really David Wise. And that's it. No, I'm actually not going to play a group of Donkey Kong Country tracks for you. Donkey Kong Country gets a lot of praise, and rightfully so, but this episode is all about David Wise's work beforehand. If you're needing to hear more Donkey Kong Country, I will suggest episode 24, Dixie Kong's Double Soundtracks, which is about how Evelyn Fisher scored the SNES version of Donkey Kong Country 3, but then David Wise made an entirely new soundtrack for the Game Boy Advance port, meaning there is another David Wise Donkey Kong Country game out there, and you might not have heard it yet. Also, episode 34 is all about the music from the Donkey Kong Land games, which have some original tunes, but also arrangements of the Donkey Kong Country music worked into the glorious sound palette of the Game Boy. As always, you can listen to previous episodes of Singing Mountain at singingmountainpod.com, or wherever else you'd normally find a podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or criticisms about Singing Mountain, the easiest way to reach me is on Twitter, either at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E, or at Singmopod, S-I-N-G-M-O-P-O-D. You can also follow Singing Mountain on Facebook. Just search Singing Mountain and then click on the one that's not a bakery. This podcast is also on Instagram at Singing Mountain Pod. Please subscribe, and if you like the show, please give me a rate and review, because those are helpful for all the reasons you've heard on every podcast ever. My latest review comes from a very nice person named Fwerig Law. I don't know what that means, but hello. This person writes in part, "At the end of the day, I listen to Singing Mountain to mellow out and unwind, and it's fantastic. The guy who makes it chooses amazing tracks and has got such a cool theme each time that works so well together, and I love the work and effort that goes into it. Thanks for the great music." Thank you for the nice words, Fwerig Law. If you want to hear me read your words in the next episode, just give me a review on iTunes and maybe say something weird, because I always tell people to say something weird and they never do. They always say nice things, and it's awkward to say nice things. It'd be a lot more fun to say weird things. This is your opportunity to make me say something funny. Go for it. This show is written, produced, and edited by me, Drew Mackey. Singing Mountain is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network that features some really cool shows, including two others that I host. Check them all out at tablecakes.com. If you want to support Singing Mountain or any of the other shows on the Table Cakes network, please do so at patreon.com/tablecakes. I have one last track for you, and I decided that because I intro'd this episode with a Donkey Kong Country track that I'd so far been unable to put in a previous episode of this podcast, I should close with one too, and I picked Mining Melancholy from Donkey Kong Country 2. As the name implies, it's an underground theme, but it's also a lot busier than what you'd normally hear for this sort of stage in other platformers. And there's a mood to it too, like it is melancholy, as the name implies, but I also feel like I get a whole lot of different emotions from this piece. Especially this part that comes in at about 1 minute and 25 seconds that kind of sounds warm and comforting to me, but also sort of like bees, which is weird because Donkey Kong Country 2 actually has a whole separate bee theme with its own music that sounds nothing like this. I can't explain that, but there is something special about this song. See ya.